Welcome to Leading Off with True Blue LA. It's Wednesday, August 3rd. This is your host, Eric Steven, and the trade deadline is come and gone. It's a long day living in Reseda, for one thing, but also with the trade deadline at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, rather than in the middle of the day like it used to be at 1 p.m. Pacific or 4 Eastern. But despite the long day, the Dodgers didn't do like a whole lot. It was kind of underwhelming in a way, but we'll get to the details and stuff. But it was a lot of like anticipation, and really it was more like maneuvering than anything. Let's just get into it. So we talked earlier in the week about Chris Martin, who they traded for from the Cubs on Saturday. He's the reliever. They required and ended up being the only pitcher the Dodgers acquired at the trade deadline. He made his debut on Monday in San Francisco and kind of had an outing that typified his season. So he got two ground balls, and he has like an over 50% ground ball rate. He also has an over 30% strikeout rate. He didn't strike anyone out, but he gave up two fly balls. One of them was a home run. He has an insanely high homer to fly ball rate. I think he's given up six in like 32 innings or something. And of course that went out. So like that's sort of been his season. Like his ERA is in the fours. His peripherals are in like the low threes and twos, depending on which method you use. So he's probably still going to be useful down the stretch, but it was just kind of a funny, like typical sort of outing for him in a way. But the hitter they acquired on Saturday was Joey Gallo, which on one level you're like, there. We've talked about all year about how the Dodgers have been extremely patient, like they were last year with Cody Bellinger and this year with Cody Bellinger, but also Max Muncy, who's coming off an elbow injury, but then also just has just struggled mightily. Like, I've been worried about, like, Muncy's power, right? His power is still nowhere close to, like, his normal years, even like his slumping 2020, his ISO was like 192, I believe, that year. Every other year, it's well over 200. It's ISO's isolated power, slugging minus batting average, just sort of a quick way to view someone's actual power. Like, so it's independent of batting average in a way. So this year, it's around 150, I think, and or maybe a little lower than that, but it's been like slowly, gradually rising, but still not to the level we're used to. The problem with him is he's been not hitting pitches in the zone and also chasing more out of the zone. He's usually great with the strike zone. He's still like, he has like 60 walks. I think he's second in walks to Juan Soto, who has like over 90, which is insane. So he's still doing that, but he's just not hitting well. And we've seen, like, Muncy's numbers are really bad. But then if you look at Gallo, Gallo's hitting 159, 282, 339. It's always tough. So I think it was, 227 players coming into Tuesday had at least 250 plate appearances this year. Number 227 in batting average was Joey Gallo at 159. Number 226 was Max Muncy at 162. But obviously there's more than offense to batting average. So if you factor everything in, Gallo is still a well below average 82 WRC plus on the year and a MLB worst 39% strikeout rate. So Muncy's at 86 WRC plus, if you were wondering. But the thing with Gallo, like, he always strikes out even when he was good, and he's usually been productive over his career. It's kind of hard to see in a way, because if you look, like, the last time he had a batting average that started with a 2 was 2019. Now, obviously, 2020 was a shortened year, and he was not good in 2020. He had a bad year, again, shortened year, 87 WRC+, but he's been above average every year outside of that in the last five. Over 100 WRC+, he had 144 mixed in there. In his three full seasons of that group, he averaged 40 home runs. And then in 2019, he only played 70 games, but he hit 22 home runs. So the guy has 80 power, right? It's just a matter of, is he going to make contact? So it's kind of the same with Muncy. Muncy doesn't have 80 power, but still very good. So they're really sort of playing for like a, trying to tap into that power, essentially. This is what Andrew Friedman had to say in a conference call earlier on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, a year ago, he was worth a lot in the industry, got traded for a lot, and the true talent level, remains. We feel like getting him here, getting him with our guys, that there's a real compelling upside story. And so, you know, for us, it was lengthening our position player base to cover for unforeseen things that could pop up in August, September, October. We saw it last year when Muntz went down the last game of the year. Just things can happen. And adding a talented player that we feel like there's some real potential upside with was something that was compelling for us.
We talked a lot about that recently, that the Dodgers needed to shore up the depth, giving them another option come playoff time, when it comes to just having another hitter ready. Like, they, we talked about like how they needed like a usable bench. Like, they had Zach McKinstry active for the better part of 3 to 4 weeks, and they only played him like three times recently. He only played in 10 games of the 39 he was active, so he was just not someone they were using, and I think getting Gallo is someone they're probably more willing to use now. You could argue, like, maybe that's a bad thing given how his performance has been, but they're, again, trying to tap into the upside. What you were... The Dodgers, again, betting on the power. They're also... They're betting on him over Jake Lamb. The Dodgers traded Jake Lamb to Seattle, where he was born, where he grew up. He went to high school there. He played college at UW in Seattle, and it was for a player to be named later for cash. Lamb was fine. Like, he did well for being where the Dodgers were at. Like, they were desperate to find outfield help and just overall hitting help when like Taylor went down and Rios went down, and they called up Trace Thompson first, then they called up Jake Lamb. Jake Lamb's not really an outfielder. He's a third baseman by trade. But he sort of made it back this year. Like, he's been bad and hurt in the majors the last, like, 4 years or so. This year he was productive, but, like, again, not really an outfielder. He played DH 12 of his 17 starts. So I think Gallo is actually a better outfielder. He's been a productive outfielder, at least in the corners. So, like, it gives them someone the Dodgers can play in the outfield and still be pretty good. How often Gallo hits, like, I don't know. Like, I'm sure they'll give him a runway, as Dave Roberts likes to say. But in the next 2 weeks, the Dodgers should be getting back Chris Taylor from a broken foot. Edwin Rios, severe hamstring strain. Both of those should be back within about 2 weeks. Both are on a rehab assignment in AAA right now. Chris Taylor started his on Tuesday night. Edwin Rios has been there for a few days. So Rios is probably going to be a couple weeks there. Taylor's going to be at least a week. So again, within the next 2 weeks, you could see those back. And then it starts to take a little bit of shape. But with Martin and Gallo, those were the only two additions the Dodgers made. They added about $4.5 million in salary the rest of the way. So the other moves, the last, 3 days or 2 days to involved clearing 40-man space more than anything. So Jake Lamb went to Seattle, and then on Monday they traded Garrett Clevenger to the Rays. What a whirlwind week for him. We talked about him last week about how the Dodgers probably needed to call someone up to replace Reyes Maranta, which they did with Clevenger. He was pitching well in AAA. He gets into one game on the night where the Dodgers have half of their 8-man bullpen unavailable. So he's thrust into a high leverage performance and then gets an error to start the inning. And instead of there being three outs and him out of the inning, he's facing a guy with two outs and a runner on, hangs a slider, turns the game around, and then he gets sort of left in to dry, hung out to dry, giving up four more runs in the ninth, and then sent down the next day, and then next thing you know, he's traded a week later. So rough patch for Clevinger, but also, you know, I think his spot was on the 40-man was tenuous for a while. Like, he always seemed to be someone the Dodgers went to as a last resort, just given how they used him. Like, last year when the offense struggled so mightily with in extra inning games and to the point where they just couldn't score, and then, like, so you'd get any sort of any kind of offense from the other team, like, that would mean a loss in extra innings for the Dodgers because they couldn't score one run, and all it took was to score a man from second base to win. But, like, so the offense wasn't doing well, but then also they got to a point where they'd, you know, be later in a game, and then Garrett Clevinger's, like, the last reliever available. He lost three extra inning games last year. Just, it was brutal. But he goes to the Rays. Maybe they'll be able to use him a little bit, but that's what that is. And then the other one, which is a little surprising, was Mitch White to Toronto. Last week, I compared White. So he was another unfortunate victim of the Dodgers' sort of tiring bullpen. So the day after they used Clevinger and had to call up Andrew Heaney, needing like a full bullpen, the Dodgers called up Jake Reed, and they optioned Mitch White after he pitched six scoreless innings in what was his last start in the rotation. So I figured he might just get bumped to the bullpen, but they needed an arm in the bullpen, so White went down. And then it turns out he's the odd man out on the roster as well. But I compared him to Ross Stripling last week because he's been pretty much above average overall in the majors in like a variety of roles, mostly swingman and occasional starter, kind of does whatever the Dodgers ask. And it seemed a lot like Ross Stripling, who did the same for his first 4 years in Los Angeles. And then, sure enough, they traded him to the Blue Jays just like they did with Ross Stripling in 2020. In that deal, the Dodgers got two minor leaguers. Nick Frasso, who's a 23-year-old in high A with like a ridiculous strikeout rate. It's in the 40s. And then Moises Brito, he's 20-year-old in the Dominican Summer League. They just signed him in June. I believe his strikeout to walk ratio through Monday was 30-1, which was really good. Again, these are, you know, in a sense, lottery tickets. The Dodgers got a minor leaguer in the Garrett Clevinger deal as well. Lamb was for player to be named later or cash. Also in the Mitch White deal, the Dodgers sent Alex DeJesus, a 20-year-old infielder who was with Great Lakes. He went in the deal. Now, DeJesus needed to be added to the 40-man roster in November or be exposed to the Rule 5 draft. Now, he wasn't like a slam dunk or anything to be added. They have a bunch of guys they have to add. And then I just think they have a general roster crunch, both with minor leaguers in the offseason that they're going to need to add, and pitchers coming off like the 60-day injured list in the second half. So DeJesus didn't affect the pitchers coming off the IL, but in terms of, you know, if you're not going to maybe add a guy, rather than lose him for just cash in the Rule 5 draft, why not try to get something for him now? So I think that was part of him being included in that trade. Who knows? But this is what Andrew Friedman had to say about the 40-man roster crunch and losing Mitch White.
You know, I think for Mitch, it's a great opportunity for him. He is a pro. Love everything about him. Really good major league pitcher. You know, for us, with the guys that we have in AA and AAA, the guys that we have coming back, you know, he deserves an opportunity. And so for us, we were able to acquire a few really talented arms that we have a little bit more runway with and time with that kind of smooths out that timing a little bit. We have a lot of pitchers kind of pushing to potentially come up at some point this year or next year, and just felt like, you know, with the potential 40-man crunch the rest of this season, with all of those, most of those talented pitchers I named coming off the 60-day, where they aren't on the roster right now, but some combination will be, we are trying to be mindful of that as well.
So in addition to Rios, the other pitchers on the 60-day injured list that could be back at some point this year are Blake Treinen, who said his shoulder was healthy the other day, and that now it's just a matter of him building back up. Like, he's not ready to pitch every other day, basically, now. So he was going to be able to need to pitch back-to-back at some point. His return is still kind of nebulous, but you figure it could be, like, late August, maybe, at the earliest. But we'll see. He's at least sort of progressing. He faced hitters. He's going to face hitters again this week and then sort of progress from there, probably go on a rehab assignment at some point. But he's at least more tangible in terms of returning. The others that are, like, maybes on the 60-day are Danny Duffy, who the Dodgers traded for last year. They re-signed him in the offseason. He still hasn't pitched for them. He might never pitch for them. But he might, and we'll see. He's apparently in Arizona still working out. Victor Gonzalez coming back from surgery. And then possibly Tommy Kahnle as well. He's sort of a 50-50 play. But, like, the point is, at least some of those could return from the 60-day, and then that requires a 40-man move. That sort of informed some of the decisions they made. Plus, you also have Dustin May and potentially in September Walker Buehler on the 60-day coming off. So I think that's part of why, you know, the Dodgers didn't do much. They're sort of counting on those people to come back, or at least some portion of them. I would have liked to see them get at least another pitcher, maybe even if it was just another reliever. But yeah, that's sort of where they're at. They did make a couple of other non-trade roster moves on Tuesday, which we're going to talk about after the break, along with some of the competition from the league, especially down south in San Diego. Oh boy. First, the big move of the trade deadline was obviously Juan Soto. The Dodgers were definitely interested in him. They didn't get him. The Padres did. If you remember back to last year, the Padres were heavily rumored to get Max Scherzer from the Nationals. And then at the last second, the Dodgers swooped in and got both Scherzer and Trey Turner. This year, the Dodgers were among the group trying to get Juan Soto. The Padres actually pulled it off, but it sort of had this funny twist to it in that so the deal was six players to Washington for Soto and Josh Bell. Mackenzie Gore, C.J. Abrams were sort of the minor league headliners. They've appeared in the majors this year, you know, not essentially minor leaguers, but like the young guys coming in the trade. Plus three other minor leaguers. Robert Hassel was one of them. They're pretty highly regarded. I don't know. I'm not here to judge whether that was a proper return for Soto, but it did seem less than the lead up to what, like, oh, you're going to have to give up your firstborn and like 73 prospects or whatever. I'm exaggerating for effect, but yeah. And then also Eric Hosmer was in the deal. And then now he has 3 years left on his contract, $39 million after this year. It was a front-loaded deal, so it's not that onerous, but he hasn't been very good. He's been slightly above average at the hitter, but he's a ground ball guy. Doesn't have a lot of power anymore. He also had a no-trade clause, a no-trade clause, and he exercised it. But so there was this brief period of, well, if Hosmer kills the deal, like, it would have been objectively hilarious had, like, the Dodgers swooped in and got the deal done because of that. Obviously, that didn't happen. But I think part of the reason for Hosmer, too, like, after this season, he would have been with the Padres 5 years. So he had a partial no-trade clause before, but, like, he would have had 10 and 5 rights this winter had the Padres tried to trade him again. So, like, they worked out another deal first to get the Soto deal done. They added Luke Voit to the deal, sort of their other first baseman DH, more DH than first base. But he was sent to Washington, so that was the deal. And then Eric Hosmer, they ended up trading to Boston. Yeah, it was a busy day for the Padres. They also got Brandon Drury from the Reds. And on Monday, they traded for Josh Hader, which was a very surprising move, not just for the Padres getting him, but for the Brewers, who were in first place in the National League Central, trading their closer. Like, very odd move. But, like, it seemed like it was a 4-for-1 deal, I believe. Denelson Lamet was among the group, and then also Taylor Rogers, the Padres closer, went in that deal. So, very interesting move. It was you don't see many moves like that with two teams in contention trading such, like, relatively high profile players. Not that, like, Denelson Lamet is a high profile player, but you know, closer for closer plus other stuff. But I think for the Brewers, the return for Hader was just too big for them to sort of ignore, even as sort of onerous as it might look. They also have Devin Williams. They also made some other trades to sort of shore up the pen besides that. So at the very least, so the Padres, as always, seem to be very exciting, and they're going to be good. I don't think they're going to collapse like they did last year. They extended Joe Musgrove. Like, you know, this is one of those things, right? If anytime a team complains about being in a small market, look at what the Padres are doing. They're spending. They want to win. And, like, it just sort of shines a light on other teams and franchises that don't want to compete. The Padres are doing it. They look pretty good. They're not going to catch the Dodgers in the division, but they're going to be like a hard out in October to get there. So, yeah, they're exciting. It's going to be a stack lineup. When Fernando Tatis comes back, you got Tatis, Soto, Machado, in some order there. That's ridiculous. They have Josh Bell, who's had a really good year too. It was a pretty wild day overall, but also for some of the players who were not dealt, like the Cubs kept William Contreras, for instance, and Ian Happ. The Red Sox kept J.D. Martinez. The Marlins kept pitcher Pablo Lopez, the Dodgers were interested in. That the Dodgers didn't get another starter and that they traded White was a pretty big bet on Dustin May, who, again, is going to return soon. He only needs about two more rehab starts in AAA before returning. Walker Buehler is expected back at some point in September, but there's some uncertainty there. The rotation at the moment is doing fine. However, you got Tony Gonsolin nearing a professional innings high, which he set in 2018. Andrew Heaney is on a pitch limit for now after losing 3 months to his shoulder injury this year. Two injury-less stints for him. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw has his injury history. I would say it's also a vote of confidence in Ryan Pepiot, should the Dodgers need like a fill-in down the stretch. Now, the other aspect of the moves, the non-trade roster moves that the Dodgers did on Tuesday were, once the 40-man situation was cleared up a bit, after the trade deadline deals, they called up Miguel Vargas for the first time. He showed up in the game on Tuesday in San Francisco, a little bit after game time. They showed him in the dugout. They also put Justin Turner on the injured list with an abdominal strain. It seemed like they were playing the waiting game on that. He missed 10 of the last 11 games, and they were kind of waiting. You know, Dave Roberts was saying, like, it was like a no-loss sort of waiting game because they would have had to call up someone on the 40-man, and before the trades in the last few days, they didn't have the room just yet. So Turner to the IL makes room for Joey Gallo. You got to figure Vargas will play a little bit, along with James Outman, who had the great debut. Occasionally, those two will play, plus getting some run until, like, Taylor and Rios return. So just to sum up, the Dodgers at the trade deadline acted like a team very comfortable with its standing, which makes some sense given the double-digit lead and a cakewalk to a bye in the NLDS. They bet big on a group of players returning from the injured list. They didn't give up any big prospects. That's the upside of not making big deals. So they still have a number of players who are both potential call-up options and potential for off-season trades if they so choose to do so. Now, Andrew Friedman, in his press conference or conference call on Tuesday, you know, he called the trade deadline the most expensive time of the year to acquire players. And it seemed like given the prices of some of the deals, the Dodgers didn't find anything to their liking. Like, they put themselves in a position to where they're not necessarily desperate to make a move, so they don't have to overpay. So, like, they just make the moves they kind of want to make at their price for the most part. Now, sometimes you still have to pay. So I think if you have as good a record as they have and a pretty good farm system, they put themselves in a position to be choosy. And so that's sort of where they're at. We'll see if it pays off, but that was the Dodgers trade deadline. This is Leading Off with True Blue LA, and I will talk to you tomorrow.